Academy. Chop my big chest, where the best is a philosophy. Drinking at lunch brings verbal skills like a sucker punch. Welcome to CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah, yeah, CMIB. Yeah, yeah.
So before we get started, this is about a murder and it's very graphic and very disturbing. If you're not into that, you should just stop listening right now. So as we proceed from here, there's going to be some gross stuff. It's about a man who is decapitated, and there's some pretty graphic details of what actually happens to the body because there's some body mutilation that comes later. For those of you who are like, ooh, I want to listen to this, maybe think about some stuff first. So back in July 3rd, a corpse was found at a love hotel. A love hotel in Japan is a place where people go to participate in intimate activities together for short term. I've explained love hotels before, but what they are is Japan has a lot of generational households where you live with your parents. Parents live with their kids into old age. So you might actually have three generations in one house. It means having intimacy in your place sometimes isn't always possible. So they created this system of hotels where you can stay for 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hours. You basically pay by the hour and entertain yourselves with your friends. So on July 3rd, staff went to clean a room and they found a corpse, but it was a headless corpse that had been decapitated. 3 weeks later, a family of three was arrested and the head was found in their residence. So that's pretty damning evidence if they actually find the head of the corpse in your house. Runa Tamura, who is 30 years old, who is the daughter of the family, has been accused of murder, mutilation of a corpse, and several other crimes. Those are the two worst ones that are going to get the most time. The victim was a 62-year-old cross-dressing man they met in the red light district of Sapporo. Now, it sounds like they had had relations multiple times in the past. The motive of this murder seems to be anger over the unprotected sex they had the previous month. So it sounds like they had had sex multiple times. They had used protection. And this last time, for some reason, the guy didn't use protection and Runa was really angry about it. So she decided to kill him. They did an S&M session where the man, the victim, was bound, and once bound was stabbed in the neck with a folding knife. Runa then decapitated the body and put this head in a suitcase and then took it home. She was picked up by her father, who is a psychiatrist, who seems to have known what she did. Now, what we find out later is much more dramatic, because you could actually say, oh, the father didn't know what was in the bag, so he just picked up his daughter when she asked for a ride. That makes perfect sense. Once home, she started to skin the head and remove the eyes. She wanted her mother to film her doing it. So now we've gotten to sort of the depths of depravity that we're actually talking about in this story. It is a lot. The mother was arrested as an accomplice. She denies doing this or any guilt or any involvement. The reason I started doing the Murder in Japan series is because when you get the actual court documents released, usually this is from TokyoReporter.com, which is an excellent website. It's where I get a lot of my news, or when I get a lot of like stories that I want to follow up on. They release court transcripts, which is a very interesting insight into the murder itself and the actual ongoings of the Japanese judicial system, which is something we don't get a lot of insight into. So that's actually, honestly, the part I'm more interested in than the actual murder. Like, the murder is the impetus for this thing happening, but I really want the insight in how the Japanese system works when they're actually prosecuting a crime. So the first part is about the mother. So the mother says under oath she takes the stand, she's under oath. She says, I only found out about the damage to the head after it was brought into the house. There's actually an implication there that she actually knew that the head was coming into the house. It was the damage she didn't know about until after. So it's not true that I allowed it to be hidden. When I found out, it was already in the bathroom. It was so abnormal that I couldn't say anything to my daughter. I couldn't blame her. I couldn't accept it. And I couldn't say anything. This seems sort of reasonable. It seems sort of reasonable because she's essentially saying, this is so beyond the pale, off the chain, that I am just in shock immediately. I was frozen. I didn't know what to do. I was just completely lost. Runa wanted the mother to video Runa doing the things to the... I'm trying to be gentle about it. I've already said it. Runa wanted the mother to video her skinning and removing the eyes from the head. Regarding the videotaping, she said, there's a difference between carrying out the videotaping and approving of it. I wasn't told what exactly we were going to film. I couldn't bear it, so I asked my husband to film it out of a desire for help. I had absolutely no intention of helping with the crime, and I had no intention of helping with the desecration. So she's saying, look, my daughter was doing this thing. She asked me to video it. I did not approve of the videoing of it. I actually didn't video it. I gave it to my husband. That doesn't mean I approved of what was going on. But again, she's kind of saying she was in shock. Her basic defense is that she says she knew, but she didn't approve of what was happening. Therefore, she has not committed any of the crime she's been accused of. The father claims he didn't know about the murder until Runa came home with the head, but he did know about the S&M. And that's actually going to be a weird little twist we hear about in a moment. Details about the family dynamic is that basically Runa ran the house and she was never punished for anything. She was essentially sort of the queen of this little family unit. In a recording from October 6, 2020, Runa yells abuse at her father in English, saying things like, I want to kill you, and why don't you follow my orders? So that actually gives you already a sense of the dynamic of what's happening in this household. She's saying, like, I give you orders, there's an expectation that you should follow them. It doesn't even make sense to me that you don't. The weird part to me is that her father's a psychologist. The father being a psychiatrist. The weird thing is that her father's a psychiatrist. He should be vaguely familiar with the results of actually giving kids, like spoiling them and giving them free rein, that this is the kind of person they grow up into. But he actually seems to have had some sort of deficiency and then fallen to this trap that he has with his own daughter. Now, there could be some other things going on. DNA, genetics, who knows? Like, I mean, there could be the bad gene. Or it could just be, this is again a nature versus nurture kind of conversation. Did they raise her wrong and she ended up a murderer? Or did she just like, she was born bad and they did everything they could to try to make her a nice person and give her a good life? And she just like manipulated all that as she grew up. We're actually never going to know. Runa says in Japanese on January 22nd, 2023, I'm going to get a little stronger and kill you guys. That's what I've always thought, my sister and I. Now, the sister part is very interesting because she doesn't actually have a sister. That same day she says, I'll kill everyone. That's all. Osamu responds, I don't kill any. Runa adds, you're not even taking responsibility. Just hurry up and do it, you idiot. So this is, again, the way she's talking to her father and the way her father's responding to her tells you a lot about the relationship. She says in Japanese, in an apparent reference to the murder victim on June 1st, 2023, the other person thinks that he is at my mercy, so I made him think that, but I am the one in control. She goes on, I thought it would be like a contest of endurance because I could pretend to be a bitch as far as I could go, but I don't look like that kind of girl, don't you think? So she's basically saying, I look innocent, I seem innocent, so people don't assume I'm capable of this kind of level of violence. So then they put the father on the stand and the defense starts questioning the father. So defense, in one of Runa's statements, she said, my sister. Did she have a sister? The father, no. The defense, who is her sister? The father says, Runa, Runa's soul. So when Runa refers to her sister, she's almost talking about another version of herself. It turns out that when she talks about Runa's sister, she's talking, that's when she sort of switches to English. So we're getting kind of a feeling of a dual personality thing going on. The defense, who is the subject of the conversation that says, I killed my sister? The father, I think Cynthia is the main character. There are many other souls, but Cynthia is the main character. So now he's talking about multiple personality disorder. Defense, who does Cynthia's soul want to kill? The father, me and Hiroko, the mother. Cynthia thinks that Runa's soul died because of our response. Defense, have you ever been harmed by Runa? The father, no. Defense, did she ever wave a knife or a kitchen knife around? The father, not directly at us. So she has waved a knife around in the past. The defense, regarding the fact that you were forced to take photos of the victim's head, could the photo session have been postponed? The father, he only had one eye left. And although it was Friday evening, I had to leave for a business trip to Kansai first thing the next morning. If I returned on Sunday night, I would be away for 2 days, and I thought I would have to ask Hiroko to take the photos. He didn't actually like even conceive of the idea that you don't have to take these photos, that you should actually say no. Just thinking about this kind of damage was enough to send shivers down my spine, and Hiroko could not bear it. It may sound rude, but I thought it would be better for this to end quickly. On the night of July 1st, 2023, Osamu drove Runa by car to Susukino. looking for the victim. So this is basically where clubs, maybe the red light district in the, in Sapporo City. In security camera footage, Osama is shown inside the club, several meters from Runa and the victim. So he's driven her to a club where the victim is. He's dropped his daughter off and he's kind of hanging out in the club waiting for them to come out. The defense asks, "What did you want from the victim?" "I thought that if she confronted him and there was an apology, the situation could be repaired. I thought that if he didn't apologize, that would be the end of it." So he's just hoping there's going to be some kind of confrontation about this sexual relationship they had, and it's just going to end that night after they have maybe an argument. "What were your thoughts when you looked for the victim?" "I hope that he wouldn't be found, that she would just give up on it." So he's actually like the whole time going, "I hope she doesn't find this guy. I hope we don't have to talk to this guy. I hope this doesn't actually work out the way I think it's going to work out." He knows something bad is going to happen if she actually finds him. The defense: "I don't think you know anything about the victim, so how did you look for places he might be?" The father: "I didn't get any personal information from him at all. I heard his nickname and that he often goes to clubs for older people on weekends, so I looked for him based on those conditions." The defense: "When Runa went looking for the victim, she called him Shika, which is Japanese for deer, on the line chat app. How did she start calling him Shika?" The father: "When we were looking for the victim, neither my daughter nor any of the family knew him, so calling him by his nickname didn't sound good to my daughter. I guess she thought there were other ways to call him. My daughter asked me to call him Shika just before we left." I don't get the relevance of that. It's an interesting point that they started talking about this guy has a nickname and what people should be calling each other. So Runa had bought the equipment. She bought a bunch of knives, several knives, and the father bought a suitcase and a saw because she told him to. She's like, "I want you to get a suitcase that holds 100 kilos and a saw, and I'm not going to tell you what it's for, but we're going to go see this guy that I'm really angry at." The father and daughter practiced S&M before the murder. So that's actually going to be the bit that comes up. Defense: "Who is the one who started talking about S&M practice?" Father: "From my daughter. After making an appointment with the victim, my daughter practiced saying, 'I was attacked last time, so this time I'll be the attacker.'" The defense: "How long did it take?" "I think at most it was 1 to 2 minutes." Defense: "Specifically?" The father: "I was sitting upright with my hands handcuffed behind my back and wearing an eye mask. And my daughter approached me from behind, touching me here and there. I remember her asking me how it felt and interacting with me." So she's got her father tied up in an S&M kind of bondage scenario. She's taken a knife or some kind of tool and she's just touching him with it, saying like, "How does this feel? How do you feel right now?" And she's trying to figure out what the best way of executing this murder would actually be. Osamu's internet history search on June 25th, 2023 shows that he researched the purchase of a large black suitcase. During questioning, he said it was to be used for Runa's doll collection, which numbers over 100. So she has 100 like toys, stuffed animals, dolls in her room. He's saying the suitcase was for that. The defense: "Did Osamu search for suitcase load capacity 100 kilograms and suitcase load capacity 50 kilograms? The father: "I don't remember exactly, but I was asked to look what could fit in it, so I did type it in myself, or click it maybe. How many dolls can fit in a black suitcase? I think 20 to 30 can fit in it. What about the 70 centimeter tall ones? I think about 15 can fit in it. How much do they weigh? Each one weighs 4 to 5 kilograms. These are heavy. So these aren't stuffed animals like I thought. These are big, heavy dolls. And 70 centimeters is about half my height. So that's like 2-3 feet tall. So if there's no cushioning or anything, it could weigh about 50 to 70 kilograms. Were you told to clearly film the destruction? I was told to film without being told what was inside the bathroom." So this is interesting, a thing the defense is doing. What they've done is gone through, did you buy the suitcase? What could fit in the suitcase? And then switch immediately back to, were you told clearly to film what she was going to do to the head? And he has to like pivot back and forth. That might be to throw the person on the stand off so that they have to answer questions without thinking. I'm just, again, I'm interested in the court proceedings and the tactics that actually take place when you're actually on trial. Defense: "At what point did you realize that the mutilation of the head would occur?" The father: "I took the camera to the bathroom, and when I was shown the damaged bottles and other things, and I was told the eyes were still in the head, I thought that the mutilation would occur. I didn't know until I got to the bathroom." But that does indicate that he knew there was a head in there and he hasn't stopped this and he hasn't called the police. During the trial, the prosecution's explanation of evidence revealed that before the incident, Osamu had searched the internet for fingerprints can be erased with bleach, very telling, and suitcase load capacity 100 kilograms. For her part, Hiroko sent a line message to Osamu asking, by the way, will the GPS record of the car be saved? She then deleted the message. She's asking, like, is there going to be a record of where the car goes that night? Can we delete that? And then she deleted that message thinking that it would then disappear. So then they get sort of switch topics and they get into the weird S&M practice again. Runa told me to sit upright in the middle of the living room of our house, put my hands behind my back and close my eyes. Osamu told the court as a witness, I was told to sit as if I was handcuffed and blindfolded. I felt something moving from behind and I felt something touching my cheeks and neck with a scarf. So he's saying there's like some kind of binding material, a scarf or something that she's touching him with. Yeah, she's testing to see what his kind of reactions are going to be before he actually goes ahead and does this actual crime. It turns out that a few more details came out a couple days ago. There are claims that she rented several horror movies 10 days before the actual crime. She rented the 2016 movie Terrifier. She rented the 2017 movie Leatherface. Both contain neck-cutting scenes which Runa recorded on her phone. So she's watching these horror movies. She's getting to these parts where she actually, like, the murderer kills someone by cutting their throat, and she records that on her phone, we assume, so she can study it later. Runa and the victim had sex multiple times. The last time, there was no protection used, and she said, you broke your promise. The only other details are about sort of her youth and when she's a child and when she was brought up. And it's really just a question of how did she get to this place in her life where she was able to command her parents so freely, where she was able to think that murder was going to be an accessible solution to this problem. Runa stopped going to school after middle school. She never went to high school. She never did any schooling beyond that. It sounds like she didn't work. She just stayed at home and ordered her parents to do things. She already had control by that time over her parents. Her parents raised their daughter without getting angry. They bought her everything she wanted, the prosecution said. They couldn't scold her. The house was overflowing with Luna's things. Hiroko lived in a small place, and Osamu had no place in the house, so he spent his time at internet cafes. So because the house was full of her stuff, there was no actual space for their parents, the father actually seemed to spend most of his time outside of the house at internet cafes, probably just surfing the internet, reading, and sleeping. Hiroko would ask her daughter what she wanted and communicated with Osamu online. So basically, she would say, what do you want today? Maybe food, maybe a thing. And then she would make that request to the father on a messaging app. And then the father would come home and just drop it off. The mother called Runa young lady and spoke to her in polite language. So in Japanese, there is familiar language and polite language. There's different levels. There's also very rude language. That's sort of the important thing you have to learn when you start learning Japanese. When you speak to your parents, you should be more polite, just a little bit, but you're still familiar. In this case, the mother is speaking to the daughter like the mother is a servant, and then the daughter is sort of the master of the house by calling her young lady. Runa told her father to sell her mother to a Jukujo Fuzoku business, which is a brothel that specializes in older women instead of younger women. And Osamu was her personal driver. So like when she went searching for the victim, the father drove her around from place to place so she could go hunting for this guy. She made the father join all-nighters at game centers and other places. Runa was selfish and treated her parents like slaves. So this is an ongoing case. There is no resolution yet, but when we get to an update, I will update on the actual results, but it's pretty clear she's guilty. It's actually more interesting as to whether or not the parents, what they're going to be prosecuted with, what they're actually going to be charged with, what they're actually going to find culpable of, because it sounds like in a weird way, once Runa took control over the household, they were almost victims of her. But of course, at any point being adults, they could have called the police. They could have looked for help. They could have tried to do something else. The fact that the father is a psychiatrist is to me one of the more interesting parts because he fed into this as much as anyone else. But at the same time, he should have known better. So this is really just a statement for anyone out there who thinks about having kids. Be strict. Do not let your children take control of everything. And do not be nice to your children. I can't stop with, well, don't be nice to your children. But absolutely, this is a case for being strict with your children and not giving them sort of that gentle, soft love and never saying no to them, like is actually a very modern trend of, what is it, gentle parenting? I'm not a fan of that. This is a very good example case of gentle parenting, and not saying no to your kids is not a good idea, because you could end up in a situation where you are driving your child around looking for a victim and participating in the crime, which is going to get you arrested as well.
Enter the mind of the academy. Chop my big chest where the best is a philosophy. Drinking at lunch brings verbal skills like a sucker punch. Welcome to CMIB.
I think this Murder in Japan series, because this is the third one, if it keeps going, should be Ninja News Japan specials, which is almost self-evident, but I've hit basically writer's block. I've been doing so many other projects that I haven't had any ideas for things to talk about for CMIB. And I don't want it to just die. So I think that's actually why I did it this way. I kind of just took what would be a special Ninja News Japan and made it into a CMIB. I was trying it out though, and I do like it. There's a lot less commentary, a lot more just like reading and passing on facts. I think this might be one that's better to do with someone else. Like I go through this stuff and then talk to someone about it.